This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. It's a little warm today, really not too bad for the middle of August. I think it's in the 90s today, but lands, we had those bunch of days of 100s like a week ago, and now when I get up in the morning and I go out for a little walk or a little run, it's typically in the low 60s and just gorgeous, gorgeous. And that's really nice. As I get out and do my little thing, and there's, you know, woods on the left side and pasture lands on the right side, and the sun is peeking its way out, and beautiful cool day, and wow, it's a good life. It's a good life. Anyways, it's been an interesting week. I've been able to get some things accomplished. Had a little bit of backpedaling to do this week. I think I mentioned that we were going to have to go back in and rip a little bit on a project that I'd been working on, but that all seems to be going well. I estimated it out at about 24, 25 hours, someplace in there, and I'm at 25 and a quarter right now. So I'm pretty close. I have a couple of hours left to just finish a few things up and do a little bit of testing, but all in all, it seems to be working. Yay! So I'm actually going to drop in tomorrow for a demo unrelated to this project. It's for another project, and then as long as I'm in, I'm going to see if I can get things finished up. I probably could have gotten it finished up before I left today, but I kind of wimped out. We'll say that I wimped out. I just felt like, you know, you've been changing a lot of stuff here, and now I'm down to the critical pieces, because we have some of this project in production already, and so when I make those critical changes, it's actually going to hit the prod stuff, and I was a little concerned about making those changes when I was tired and not making them right. So anyways, the boys are all running by from one of the Drury Health classes, I think. There's a college just up the street, private college, private university named Drury University, and a bunch of boys just ran by in their little shorts getting their exercise in. Anyway, so that's going well. The writing seems to be going well. I believe I am on the last chapter of the last book in the Grumpy Old Prophet series. So, hey, that's a good deal. I expect that I'm going to, you know, make some progress on that this weekend. I don't know that I'll get the final chapter all put together. What I need to do in the final chapter is really pretty straightforward. I just need to recap. I need to recap the whole series, but I'd kind of like to hit the moment. I think there's some potential for hitting the moment, and that would be nice to wrap it up. It's interesting, this book has a different shape than the other books have. In the other books, what I was trying to do is give a bunch of examples, different settings, different experiences. And then once I had all those examples in place, then about halfway through the book or so, or two-thirds of the way through the book, bring the lesson. And then towards the end of the book, have the big dramatic thing where we have the emotional moments. And in this particular book, a lot of the emotional moments happened right up front, because you're dealing with the resurrection and the initial goodbyes, where everyone thinks, you know, this is it, we're all going home. No, we're not going home, we're coming back to Jerusalem, because Jesus is risen, and he says, go back to Jerusalem and wait for the promise. And so there's kind of a series of goodbyes here and there, but this final chapter is the last exchange between Mary and Moses and Elijah, which is really kind of what got this whole thing started. So I think there'll be some moments there that we can pull to have a little emotional resonance. And I've got plenty of lesson things to talk about to sort of bring all that, those ideas that I've been playing with about the early church and its relationship to God and its relationship to other people. I've been playing with a lot of those ideas through this book, and so I need to bring them all home and make it very clear what I'm saying, just in case someone misses the message. So the last chapter is going to be called Homegoing, and I think it'll be fine. It's just a matter of getting it written now and finding some spots where I can hit the moment and go on. And I'm pretty pleased with how the whole series has turned out. I think it has a good arc, overall arc. Each of the books have a good arc in them, and there's a good overall arc where the intensity and the emotional content builds, and it peaks just where it's supposed to peak, which is, of course, the crucifixion scene and the death scene. But yet there's enough interest left as it's falling away, and we're coming to resolution that I think it's, I'm pleased with it. So that's good. Still have a lot of work, because even after I get this one in beta, then I've got to turn around and actually start producing the production versions of all these. So it'll be fine. It'll be fine. This week, I've had a chance to get together with several buddies. My buddy that I have been scheduled for some time to get together with on Thursday nights, and we just never seem to be able to get our schedules together, we went ahead and moved to Monday morning. And so that was our first time to get together on Monday morning this week. And
excuse me.
That time seemed to work out well. So my Thursday evening has moved to Monday breakfast. So now I have a Monday breakfast scheduled. I have a Tuesday breakfast scheduled. Wednesday is fast day, but I have a Wednesday evening where I get together with a buddy. And then I have a Thursday morning once a month scheduled. And then I have a Friday morning scheduled and a Saturday morning scheduled. So I was telling my wife about that. She said, so basically all your evening meals have moved to breakfasts. And I said, yep, pretty much. Pretty much. But that's how life moves. And as always, I just really, really enjoy getting together, sharing a meal, talking about the things of God, and talking about all kinds of other things. But usually, eventually, we get around to talking about something substantive in terms of our relationship and how we move forward. Well, one of my buddies told me about a TED Talk that he had been watching, and he recommended it and a subsequent one, and I'm glad he did. I went and I watched them, and I thought, yeah, this is pretty good. So I'm going to be talking this week about The Paradox of Choice, which is by a man named Barry Schwartz, who is the head of a psychology department somewhere. I should have written that down. I didn't. He has written a book called The Paradox of Choice, and his TED Talk was a quick summary of the entire book. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. And very interesting to see what he believes is the solution for it. And we'll talk about that here in a little bit. As I was getting ready to come home, I was scanning an article as well in the New York Times about a Bible Belt pastor who has now become an atheist. And the article is about a lot of these pastors who are becoming atheists. I don't know how many a lot means, but there are some, and they have their own support groups. And I thought, oh, this is very interesting. This is very interesting. So at some point, I probably will do a podcast on that, because I'm very interested to see why and what has disillusioned these pastors. In Grumpy Old Prophets, Book 3, which is Part 4, Moses actually talks at one point about the fact that there are a few major drivers for disillusionment and rejection of the Christ and of God. And I may bring some of that in, because I'm interested to see why people turned away. And we'll talk about more about that later. Anyways, the paradox of choice. Barry Schwartz, in his TED Talk, gave what I considered immediately to be a very interesting opening, and then subsequently expounded on it and elaborated. And it really, it was a very good talk. Very, very interesting. He began by talking about the official dogma. The official dogma of all Western societies, according to him. And he said the official dogma of all Western societies is something like this. If we are interested in maximizing the welfare of our citizens, the way to do that is to maximize individual freedom. And the reason that maximizing individual freedom is important is that it is in and of itself good, valuable, and worthwhile. It is essential to being human. Now then, he said, okay, how do we know that we have maximized human freedom? And in his mind, how we know that we have maximized human freedom is that we have the freedom to choose. We have the freedom to do things that will maximize our welfare. And to lay hold of those things which we desire, reach out to those things which intrigue us, and experiencing those things which we are interested in, we can choose. We have that ability. So what he's saying is that happiness and freedom, well, specifically freedom, is essential for human contentment and happiness, and that the way we gather this maximum freedom, I'm just picking up the paper again because I want to make sure that I'm saying this correctly, that freedom is in itself good, valuable, and worthwhile, and is essential to being human. So in order to be truly human, we really have to be free to make the choices that we might make. Okay. Now then, as we look at our society then, what do we find in terms of freedom? Well, I've talked about this in the past. There was a day I finally decided to count. It was years and years ago, and I was working on my first novel, The Sun, the Wind, and the Rain. And I wanted to describe what to me was always obscene about the grocery store. Having grown up overseas, I still walk into the Walmart Supercenter. I still walk through the aisles and find myself somewhat uncomfortable. So one day, I walked down the breakfast cereal aisle, and I started counting. And I came up with over 150 different varieties of breakfast cereals. And frankly, I found that to be obscene, having come from a country where people were starving to death, having come from a country where it was not unusual for people to squat at the garbage dumps and hope for a good position when the garbage trucks dumped their loads so that they could scramble through and find the good garbage that was still consumable. Over 150 different kinds of breakfast cereals. Barry Schwartz didn't mention that, but he did mention 175 different salad dressings. He said, if you don't count the 10 extra virgin olive oils and the 12 balsamic vinegars that you could buy to make a very large number of your own salad dressings, in the off chance that none of the 175 that the store has to offer suits you. He also talks about the fact that if you go into any electronics store, there's all these components that you can buy. CD players, DVD players, Blu-ray players, amplifier speakers, all this different choice, this freedom you have. And he calculated it up, and there were something like 6.5 million combinations. He also talked about phones. He said, in the old days, you really didn't have much of a choice as to what kind of phone you would get. You got your phone from Ma Bell. He said, you rented it. Interesting thing there, if it ever broke, they came and fixed it. He said, now, of course, there are hundreds of different types of phones that you can get. What's interesting about all of this is that all of this choice has certain consequences. And this is where things started getting interesting for me. Because you have all of this choice, and you would think that this would lead to people being truly satisfied and empowered in life. And in fact, it does not. And he started going through why in his decision, in his position, things do not add up. And the reason they don't add up, according to him, is that all of this choice has some verifiable consequences. So, for instance, one of the consequences is that people start to become paralyzed. They see all these choices, they don't know what they should choose, and so they choose nothing. He said there was an interesting research project that was done where the researchers got access to some records from Vanguard, which runs a lot of retirement programs. And he was saying that their research showed that for every 50 retirement programs that a given company had, the participation, well, wait, for every 10 that a company offered, participation would go down 2%. So if a company offered 50 retirement plans, 10% of the employees would never sign up. There would be 10% less employees who would sign up. Because people would look at all this and they wouldn't know what to choose, and they'd just get paralyzed. Even though their employer, in some cases, was compensating them, matching their dollars, $5,000 a year, people would not choose because they were paralyzed. They didn't know what to do. And another consequence is, even after you make your choice, that choice isn't necessarily satisfying. He told this really funny story about jeans. How he said in the old days, you'd buy a pair of jeans and they wouldn't fit very well. In fact, they'd fit horrible, and you'd wear them for years and finally get them broken, and then when they wore out, you'd start all over again. He said, so I went to my store and he said, my jeans have finally worn out, so I wanted a new pair of jeans. And he said, I told him I want a new pair of jeans. And he said, I'm picking up the piece of paper. And he said, I get in there, want a pair of jeans, and this shopkeeper rattles off all this stuff. But all the different kinds of jeans you can have. Blah, 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 blah. All the different kinds of jeans. And now you're consumed with the fact that even if I do make a choice, is it a good choice? I'm not sure it's a good choice. Thinking about it, oh, maybe you should have chose the other one. Not only that, a third consequence is you have this, what he called an escalation of expectations. And man, if I got all this choice, if I pick the right one, it's going to be fabulous. Not only am I worried about picking the wrong one, I'm expecting that when I do pick the right one, forget it. And he said, after going through all trying on all these pairs of jeans, I walked out of there with a pair of jeans that actually fit pretty well. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, yeah, these should fit better, though. They really should fit better. There's a few spots that don't fit, and there's all these jeans. Why can't it fit better? Not satisfied. Paralyzed by choice. Afraid that we're making the wrong choice. Not satisfied when we do make a choice. The paradox of choice. Okay, so I can see all that. I absolutely can see all that. And I think I know where it's coming from. He didn't actually tell where all that stuff was coming from. But I think I can tell you where it's coming from. And he was talking about on this term. And he was saying, nowadays, the world we live in, we affluent industrialized citizens with perfection, the expectation, the best you can ever hope for, it's that stuff is as good as you expect it to be. And I actually had kind of an interesting flashback as I was listening to him about my phone that I have now. I have a Samsung Galaxy Nexus now. I looked at all my options out there, kind of narrowed it down, went and felt them, looked at them in the store, walked out. And I got it home, and I knew the reasons that I had actually picked this phone. I got it home, and for that first 2 days or so, I'm getting my mail. I was going, I'm not sure. And then I remembered, hold up. Just hold. Give yourself a couple of days. Just hold. And, you know, by the end of that weekend, and I consoled myself with, if you need to, you can take it back. And, you know, and you just have to pay like $35 sunk cost. Go on, never mind. And so, you know, I stuck it out for a couple more days. And then all of a sudden I was like, you know, this phone really is not, this is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. And I've enjoyed my phone ever since. I'm still not sure why I don't have Jelly Bean yet. Because theoretically, I was supposed to get this Samsung Galaxy Nexus, and I was supposed to be first in line for upgrades, but I'm not. But you know what? I'll survive that. I'm backing into my garage. Anyways, what's interesting then is this... Barry Schwartz, he said that all his studies, and he said this half jokingly, but not really, in his studies then he has determined that the secret to happiness is low expectations. If you can really have low expectations, then that's really how you stay happy in life, which is very interesting and we'll probably get back to in a minute. The other thing he said that was interesting is that clinical depression has exploded in the industrial world in the last generation. And he actually thinks that a significant, not the only, but a significant contributor to it is that people are having experiences that are disappointing because their standards are so high. And when they have to explain these experiences to themselves, they think they're at fault. So in wrapping it all up then, what was his solution? What approach did he think would fix that? And this is kind of where it got interesting. He said, there's no question that some choice is better than none, but it doesn't follow from that that more choice is better than some. There's some magical amount. I don't know what it is. I'm pretty confident that we have long passed since the point where our options improve our welfare. Okay. So then, okay, What do we do? You also know that what I'm telling you is that these expensive, complicated choices, it's not simply that they won't help. They actually hurt. They actually make us worse off. And so listen to this. If some of what enables people in our societies to make all of the choices we make were shifted to societies in which people have too few options, not only would those people's lives be improved, but ours would be improved also. This is what economists call a Pareto improvement move. Income redistribution will make everyone better off, not just poor people, because of how all this excess choice plagues us. So to conclude, you're supposed to read this cartoon, which he had a cartoon of fish in a fishbowl, and they said, nothing is impossible. And he said, of course, we look at that and say, oh, well, that's ridiculous, because they're just in a fishbowl. He said, but the more I thought about it, the more I came to the view that the fish knows something, because the truth of the matter is that if you shatter the fishbowl so that everything is possible, you don't have freedom, you have paralysis. If you shatter this fishbowl so that everything is possible, you decrease satisfaction. You increase paralysis and you decrease satisfaction. Everybody needs a fishbowl. This one is almost certainly too limited, perhaps even for the fish, certainly for us, but the absence of some metaphorical fishbowl is a recipe for misery and, I suspect, disaster. And so his solution is we should arbitrarily limit people. I guess we set up a commission to figure out how much choice is good and how much choice is bad. And then this commission or this arbitrary force that we put in place and sign our lives over determines how many things we get to choose from. So I don't know if the optimum number is 6 or 7 or 2. Or one. I mean, honestly, can you imagine trying to actually run this organization? I'm sorry, you can't invent that new thing, because that thing is of category A, and we already have 2 of those or 6 of those. So I'm sorry, you just have to invent something else. But my thing is better. Well, that's just too bad, because you're just going to confuse people and make them depressed. We can't allow that. I'm sorry. You've just made too much money. So we're just going to take your money away and put it over here. Oh, man. Certainly there have been societies like that in the past, and there may be societies like that in the future. But I have a sneaking suspicion that even in those societies, you would find that people are still depressed, that people are still paralyzed with choice, that people still feel like they're getting a raw deal from life, and that people are still unhappy with their choices. Why? Because their unhappiness, their paralysis, their frustration has nothing to do with the choices they face. Certainly, you can look at all these choices and you can see all these symptoms that come out of it, and you can say, oh, these choices are what lead to those symptoms and are causing those symptoms. But in fact, in my little world, those symptoms are not caused by those choices. What's causing those choices is the flesh. That is seeking to rob people from contentment, that is seeking to call into question the decisions people make. The reason I can look at all the gajillion cell phones that are out there and narrow it down to a Galaxy Nexus and be quite content with this Galaxy Nexus, honestly, even though I don't have Jelly Bean yet, is because I recognize where the source of my discontentment is coming from. That's not very good English, but it will do. I recognize that buyer's remorse, that analysis paralysis, that regret is nothing more than an effort of the flesh to rob me of the joy of my life. I recognize that I cannot undo a choice after it happens, and that it is futile and silly to beat myself up over a choice. Why? because I understand that when I make a choice, no matter how diligent I am from making the choice, that the next thing that's going to happen is the flesh is going to try to dig in its heels and tell me I made the wrong choice and I was stupid for making that choice. And so what I do is, knowing that that's what it is, I don't listen to that. And my flesh has felt me reject it enough in that it tries far less hard than it used to convince me that I've just made a mistake. So when my flesh starts saying, oh yeah, the stupid phone, you really bought the wrong phone, I can't believe you bought the wrong phone. I say to myself, you know what? If I take back the phone, I have to pay $35 put back in the phone. I can afford the $35. Had to try it. I tried it. If I end up not liking it, I'll fix it. If I end up liking it, I'll keep it. It will be fine. And then I go on. And my flesh huffs around a little bit, and finally it just gives up and tries to find something else to bug me about. Because all these choices are an extraordinary privilege. I grew up in a country that didn't have many choices. And while all these choices sometimes set me back and cause me to think, wow, this is obscene. Fact of the matter is, I am extraordinarily grateful to live in America. I am extraordinarily grateful for the blessings in my life, and certainly am willing and do share those blessings with others. And I am not going to let my flesh take those blessings and make them a source of fear, or make them a source of condemnation, or make them a source of accusation, because I am grateful for every choice that is before me, because I've lived in a country where I've seen they don't have many choices. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.